We all know that cars mean traffic, errands, and budgets.
But they should also represent freedom and fun. Join us as we work to find everyone a car they'll love. I'm Paul.
I'm Todd. And this is the Everyday Driver Car Debate. All of a sudden in the last week, there's been lots of cars and cars experiences.
Mm-hmm.
We were traveling to L.A. I actually Turoed with my wife. I Turoed a Volvo S90 that we all enjoyed.
Yeah, for sure.
We had a press car. You've probably already seen it because it was the world's fastest everyday driver turnaround. Yeah. We did a fast blast of the Corolla new hatchback XSE that you guys have asked about. It's the 6-speed. Is the Corolla a hot hatch now? Blah, blah, blah. That's out.
It's a hatch.
It's a hat. It's a hatch. It
has some hatchiness.
It's
is
warm.
There hotness? It's,
yeah. So there's that whole thing. And there's actually some great questions coming up there. So we did that.
It isn't cold, we'll say.
And then when I came back, I actually ended up taking an Uber home. And I got to talking with my Uber driver, and I had a conversation that did not go as I expected.
This is so interesting.
We're going from Salt Lake to Park City. And the thing about that is that's not a hard drive. Nothing about that drive is difficult.
No,
it's 25
easy.
Minutes. It's up a mountain pass. It's nice.
Right.
Now, granted, we've had a lot of weird weather this year, but there is a segment of people in Salt Lake, because I meet them, that are always like, how is it in Park City? Like, it's this wild, crazy
you're
place so far away.
You're way up there.
How is it coming down from Park? I'm like, it's Interstate 80.
It's a federal highway.
It's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
So I just asked this Uber driver about going back and forth to Park City. He was like, yeah, I do it all the time. It's not a big deal. I don't care. And he was very easygoing about it. So then I went, wait, hang on. What's the farthest you've ever gone for somebody? And I expected an hour. Because Park City is a half hour. I expected an hour, maybe 2 hours,
Sure, maybe north up to Ogden or something like that.
Maybe you went to the southern end of Idaho. You went to Rexburg or something. Who knows?
Right,
okay,
right.
I'm expecting something like this. He looks at me in the rearview mirror and he goes, Vegas. And I went, wait, hang on. Whoa.
It's amazing.
You went from Salt Lake City to Vegas on an Uber call? And he said, yeah. And I said, okay, tell me this story. He said he showed up at this hotel here in Salt Lake called the Grand America. It's an old, classic, high-end hotel.
It's been around a long time.
It's in the dead center of town, just so you know. He showed up at the Grand America, and this old couple comes out to the car with bags. And they were very old. And he asked them, okay, first off, did you put the address in right? And they said, yeah. We hate to fly. We don't like to fly. We want to go to the Bellagio in Vegas. Now, if you don't know, that is a six-ish hour drive one way. That's like a six and a half hour drive one way.
Unreal.
He did an Uber drive from Salt Lake to Vegas. I said, what did that cost him? He said, $800. So he got an $800 Uber trip. He drove down to Vegas. He stayed with friends overnight because it's a six-hour drive one way. He stayed with friends overnight and then drove back.
It's like less than $100 on Southwest out of
it
Salt
is,
Lake to
but
Vegas.
You clearly don't like to fly.
You really, really
you
don't
really
like to
don't
fly.
Want to fly. You'd rather do the six-hour drive and pay $800
oh
for
gosh.
It. Well, and also, along those lines, you really want to go to Vegas.
I guess
honey,
so.
We're going to Vegas. Yeah, anyway.
I always ask people at checking me out at Costco, how much is the largest total
people have
spent? Same kind of idea. I'm just curious, and it's more like, people who run restaurants or, big one-time purchases, they buy a bunch of TVs for a hotel
or things like that.
And it's always like, oh my gosh, how crazy. That's awesome. Well, guys, happy Friday. Welcome back to the podcast. Yes, we're back in the studio, as you can tell, and we have got original content coming up this Saturday, tomorrow, on Motor Trend Network. So that is 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 a.m. Pacific. Set your DVRs, please.
Yes.
But it is pretty cool because it is the Jaguar E-Pace right up against the Volvo XC40. They're actually both in blue, very different shades of blue. But both of those are together, and we drove around a section of Los Angeles called Westwood, which is right where University of California, Los Angeles, so UCLA is right in that area, and a pretty cool part of town, and you can see, everything. It just fits right in with traffic. And,
totally.
And very much back to, kind of the buying discussion for these sort of upper slice SUVs.
It's the small five-seaters that neither of these car makers have ever made a car in this area before. And so it's the new versions for them. And, of course, it's interesting to drive two very different SUVs. I really like that piece. It's pretty fun. It's very different.
Cool.
So that is actually tomorrow, Saturday. And of course, all of this stuff, I'm going to tell you again, it is all coming to Amazon Prime and Vimeo. Expect late March when that's actually live. When it officially goes live, we will tell you. That is in process. Meanwhile,
we're going to also drop the entire season. We're not going to trickle things out. So that is the difference this time around, even though I think that's kind of how it's gone down in the past. But we'll upload everything and then make that available all at once. You can get the entire season.
Yeah, we're
going to
set it up for binge watch for season four. Yeah. So that is coming up soon. That is seven brand new episodes, actually delivered episodes. Episode seven is done. It just hasn't actually gotten to Velocity yet. So it's a little bit, it's kind of last minute, but it is finished. Yeah. And episode seven is going to be crazy because it is, I'm going to stay with the word adventure. It is our Lemons Racing adventure for the second time around.
Adventure is
being kind to that experience, but I'm genuinely excited for the conversation it begins, because it feels like one of those pieces that we are going to be talking to you guys, the audience, about what happened. And it's almost like go back to our Mid-Engines of Mountains film. Some of the crazy stuff that happened on that was not on camera. The crazy stuff that happened in this Lemons race is on camera, which is what's fun about this. So I look forward to talking about it's happened.
Yeah, I was going to say, we cannot say. There's stuff I want to dissect, and I want to explain the headspace, but I'm actually glad. Honestly, I'm glad the way it turned out because of the visuals and because of the piece. So
looking
forward to sharing that. And guys, thank you to Covercraft and Griot's Garage for sponsoring the TV season, and it is Covercraft that headlines the entire season. We couldn't do it without these two companies, honestly. Yeah. Thank you to both these companies. They've been great to us. And if you buy anything on their website, every day is the code to use when you're checking out for 10% off. Mm-hmm. So just think every day. And we're going to continue to use that code as we proliferate new advertisers. As that comes about, we're going to try to land on every day so that's just one single code for you to remember.
We have snow transitioning to mud, and I have two dogs. I've never been so excited about having a rear seat cover in my life. It's the greatest thing ever now. So if you have a rear seat and children or dogs, I'm telling you, spend the money on a good rear seat cover from Covercraft.
Agreed.
Honestly, 3 years ago, even while my son was messier and my dog was younger, I would have thought, nah. But I can't even tell you how thrilled I am. Anyway, that's a side note.
Well, we've got some business to get to, but we will talk about here some purchase updates. So this first half of the podcast is going to be four purchase updates. We have asked for those. Thank you guys for sending those in to us. These are going to be kind of fun because you get to hear what people have bought.
It's the what you bought thing.
There's a little bit of an adjustment to when we ask for updates. Mm-hmm. Just an addendum, I'll say. So when you're writing updates to us, write with the episode number of that you were featured in, so that the podcast episode number that we debated for you, that helps us because we can go back and reference that. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, everybody listening can go back and listen to that as well.
Yeah, if they'd like to. And it allows us to be able to list off, okay, so here's the stuff we listed for you, and here's where you went. Because sometimes it matches and sometimes it doesn't, which is what's kind of cool, is we'll list three or four things and you guys will buy some
those
sort
guys
of,
are wrong.
Exactly, buy some sort of wild
different.
Card. But other times we'll list a bunch of things and you'll go off and you'll do drive homework and you'll land on something awesome. And then there's the other phenomenon that happens that I've teased you about, Paul, but it is regular. And that is, you'll blow somebody's budget out and we'll all go, oh, Paul, you blew out the budget. And then we get the what you bought email back, and the person spent $15,000, like $15,000 more than they planned for.
It happens.
Well, I know my budget was $30,000, but I just went and bought a car for $48,000. It's like, whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
So we know this happens. Of course, we are victims of this reality too. So we love getting these what you bought emails. So we're going to go through a few of those. And then we have a very cool car debate after the break as well. That one's for Austin writing to us. Austin writing from Houston.
Did you notice that?
I did.
It'd be weird if Austin didn't live in Houston, because Austin and Austin would just be too weird.
Well, but that exists, though. I have met those people. Austin living in Austin. Maybe Austin lived in Austin and moved to Houston just to solve
and
that.
I knew a guy in Art Center named Dallas. So he lived in L.A. and he was named Dallas.
There's that ridiculous. I mean, there's a lot of ridiculous moments, but there's that ridiculous
moment.
Take that
pretty far.
When he introduces his whole squad in Forrest Gump. and the whole squad is named after cities, but not the cities they're from. There's Dallas from Phoenix.
Exactly.
And everybody else is like that. It's just, you know, the whole group. Anyway,
That's right. I forgot about that. Excellent.
So, yeah, that's a side note. Anyway, now it's a movie podcast. All right, let's actually do a What You Bought section here.
Well, we do. I do want to touch on a little segment here about the Geneva Motor Show, which has currently gone down. Mm-hmm. And it's actually currently going on. That is the Geneva Motor Show 2019. And I wanted to touch on some highlights and, well, kind of lowlights. But really, Geneva, if you've looked at any coverage, you will notice that most of the exhibitors are such high-end brands that they're almost unrelatable. They are unrelatable
to
the rest of us.
It's a hypercar throwdown.
It is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's not just the manufacturers, the Bugatti, Ferrari, Lamborghini, you know, the Evo Spider is out. Like, and I look at that and I want to be excited, and but it's almost like I don't care anymore because I'm interested in things like the Polestar 2 that came out from Volvo.
Sure,
will be in the U.S. market for $63,000, which is not cheap, but to me, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's a whole lot less than a Tesla Model S. That's, you know... Yeah, a little bit more than Model 3, but now we're talking. Now we've got some talking points here.
Yeah,
we've got
some
discussion because, I see the Koenigsegg Jesko, named after Christian von Koenigsegg's father.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Amazing. The
Very
technology.
Cool. All of it's cool. All of his stuff is so cool.
I love reading about him and understanding. Yeah, yeah. Holy cow, you are bringing some very creative ways of approaching just their new transmission in that car. They call it the light-speed transmission because it is now without synchros. It shifts so fast, it's lighter, on and on. It's just amazing. But I'm thinking, how does that trickle down to the rest of us? Mm-hmm. In some cases, it doesn't. It's for those high-end cars that'll, in many cases, sit in garages.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up about Christian von Koenigsegg, because the guy clearly has got some genius ideas for cars.
Absolutely.
He's done crazy things. I mean, he's like retrofitted his Saab with a crazy engine and all this kind of stuff. What's interesting is, to this point, Koenigsegg hasn't really become, and I mean this as a compliment, please follow me, they haven't really become Lotus. And what I mean is, not a company that rarely sells cars and can't remain solvent. I don't mean that. I mean the part of Lotus that was Lotus Engineering that's been hired by all kinds of car companies throughout history to help them refine certain parts of what they do. To my knowledge, Koenigsegg isn't directly taking these technological breakthroughs they're coming up with and selling them to GM. Or Ford, or whoever. And that would be interesting. But as a result, it's staying very kind of four-walled into the people that actually buy his stuff. And again, the new Aston Martins and all this kind of stuff. We're talking about hypercars that are such hypercars and such, we just thought of this and rolled out the new one, that they're almost vaporware. Almost.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And one of my favorites actually is the Aston Martin Vanquish Vision concept.
It's not
the 003, which is the hypercar.
Yeah.
This is the Vision concept. Mm-hmm. And I will say, Aston has now broken out of their styling, I guess, style playbook and out
completely.
Of their mold to introduce something completely new that is very them now is trickling down to the lesser expensive. I'm excited looking at new form language. It's at the very high end, but that doesn't mean new form language can't be explored and introduced from other manufacturers.
Sure.
Like the Honda E electric vehicle, the prototype.
Yeah, the little guy, yeah.
It is so clean, so simple, it's unfussy.
Yes.
Doing that kind of design is actually very hard because the surfaces and the proportions are so carefully crafted. Mm-hmm. You think you just, well, I'll just spit out the design. I bet you... It's almost as much work as something like that Aston.
Oh,
I'm willing to fully
agree that it is, because it's all about the details and making it compact and still making it look. And here's the thing. I know this sounds crazy, but you look at that car and it looks cheerful. So many little compacts look gruff, or they look compromised, or they look, well, we just needed something, so we just made it look cheap. This looks A, well-designed, and B, happy to exist,
which is weird
to say about a car, but I actually think that matters, too. I mean, you were just talking about Aston Martin. The current Vantage, its problem is it has a catfish nose. Gorgeous design with a catfish nose.
Yeah.
No one actually backed up and went, that looks like a catfish. That looks like a bottom feeder. Nobody thought that.
I mean, yeah.
Here is a all-electric car, which could be a, you know what, that's good enough. Let's just punt. And it just looks happy.
Yeah. Proportions are great. It looks it looks so relatable, and that's why I love Geneva for that. I mean, the point is, good design can happen at both levels, but it almost happens better at a constrained budgetary level than a blue sky, you know, like the Bugatti La Voiture Noire, the black Bugatti that is one.
Yeah, we made a single different body on a Chiron. Who would like to write the check?
Not even caring. And there's companies like Mansory who can make your Chiron even cooler, and you can spend more money on it if you're just not happy with the base Chiron.
Are we going with cooler? Because I don't know that Mansory really helps anything look cooler. More unique, more expensive,
you're
exclusive,
right.
Maybe.
I'll refine that.
But cooler?
I'll refine that. Cool. You think you're cooler.
Yes.
The purchaser now thinks they're cooler.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's an ego stroke.
Ruined
is what
the
it really
design
is. Yeah.
In many cases. And they're doing this to everything. But people who need to spend money, it's just staggering. And then, you know.
Quick, Mansory, 911. I have money. I need to spend it. I have an S-Class. What
poor.
Can you do? Please make it uglier.
Oh, my
God. Thank you.
There's so many. I mean, I made a list. There's so many. But yes, go look at things, but then find the gems like the Mazda CX-30. The Mazda CX-30 now exists because the Mazda CX-4, which you would think would be the natural nomenclature, exists only in China and is only sold in China. And so they had to come up with a new nomenclature. I don't really agree with that, but they did, and it's now even more confusing. We cleared things up by making it more confusing.
Well, but also, isn't it Japanese culture where the number 4 is a bad number too? Isn't that their number 13?
I can't verify that. Somebody listening can. Yeah. But in China, it's fine.
Clearly, in China, it's fine. But I also think that that's situation too.
I know 8s in China are great.
But I'm pretty sure that 4 is like the Japanese 13, I think. But anyway, go on.
All right, so my favorite car, besides the Aston Martin, is this Matt's new Stratos. Essentially, the rebodied, remanufactured, reimagined new Stratos. It's the Manifattura Automobili Torino. It's a manufacturer there. They're making 25 of these. And I'm in love with this thing. It's gorge. Oh, my gosh. It reminds me, actually, Todd and I had a suggestion. You know how we've been talking about safari vehicles lately and safari-izing everything? Mm-hmm. And a suggestion was made to us for a Triumph TR7. Fender flares, big engine. And I thought that could work because it's like a poor man's Stratos.
Yeah, it is.
It has that wedge feel and shape and proportion, dimensions. Compact size, all of that stuff, and I thought, ooh, that needs to be sketched.
It could be cool.
I keep talking about all this work that I need to do, sketching that I need to do.
Sketch it out. I'd love to see it for sure.
What else? Toyota GR Super GT4 just announcing, cool, let's make, you know, the race series. And Nissan, you know, bringing new design language and full electric power. And then Volkswagen still on their diesel apology tour and saying, hey, here's the
We need to
cool
make that
thing.
Shirt. It needs to look like a concert shirt, but it's the diesel apology tour.
With the cities on the back?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can we sell them for like, I don't know, $55 like they do at concerts?
Well, but you know what it should be? It should be a list of cars on the back that used to have diesels.
Yeah, that's great.
All the TDIs crossed out. Instead of saying sold out, like no longer sold. Instead of saying sold out, it says no longer sold.
Speaking of which, there's a graveyard just outside of Los Angeles that is the parking lot for all these cars. And I found it because I found this a photographer. He actually won a National Geographic Award. Went up in a small plane and photographed this lot of Audis and Porsches and Volkswagens that were reclaimed, that were taken back in. And you think, well, what happened to those? And it's up in the Lancaster area near the airport.
It's where they run out all the planes, too, yeah.
They're all parked in a lot. That's where they are. They're
bumper
just
to bumper.
Parked right now.
Yep.
They still exist. They're just parked out in the desert. It's astounding to me. So yes, we need to make the Volkswagen World Apology Tour.
Anyway.
Oh yeah, I love it.
Diesel, what's that? Oh, by the way, one quick thing. We had honestly, our LA, recent LA trip was very much a business trip, and I won't bore you with what was going on, but we didn't go to shoot. I mean, we shot the Corolla piece, mainly there
Not
for
a
meetings.
Regular TV shoot.
Meetings we were trying to do in the fall, but we were just too busy, and so we stacked up a bunch of meetings, and we went, and that's why we were there.
Right.
So it was a little bit of an oddball trip for us. In fact, there were sometimes when Paul and I were actually sitting in the hotel room doing work before we went to another meeting, because it was very funny. But in the midst of that, it was actually Steve Urban, who has listened for a long time. Hi, Steve. Said, hey, why don't you guys do a meetup while you're here? And we kind of looked at each other and went, well, yeah, we should. So it was the most last-minute meetup ever.
Right, right.
So we didn't know if anybody could come, honestly. And a few of you came out, and I just wanted to give a shout-out to Omar and Richard and James and Elliot and also Edgar for coming out and just saying hello and just hanging out for a while. It was so informal. It was so last-minute.
Yep.
It was raining in L.A., which, by the way, raining in L.A. is all the roads are covered in ice anywhere else.
Exactly.
So if you're going to brave L.A. traffic, that's one thing. If you're going to brave L.A. traffic in a rainstorm, you really want to get somewhere. So thank you for coming out for that. That was cool. And it was just – it's always fun, even when it's something informal and small like this, to just sit there and hang out with people and talk about cars and talk about the show and just – yeah, that's always very cool.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for those of you that couldn't be there and wanted to be. We saw a lot of those interactions. Also, thank you to those that have said, hey, our city next. We hear you. We're sorry.
We haven't
done the tour. We need to do our tour. That shirt with all the names on the back. Anyway, yeah.
The U.S. tour, the global tour. All right. Well, onwards to the car purchase updates. First of all, from Ben Grand in Richmond, Virginia, who wrote to us. He had his debate, and we're not exactly sure which debate number that is, but it was the replacement for his Mercedes C250, and it needed to hold golf clubs. And I suggested strapping the clubs to the side of a Mazda MX-5.
Problem solved, yeah.
But he found a better alternative that checked almost every box. And again, guys, the updates and what you buy, if you're inspired by hearing our conversation and pretending and using it as a group conversation to kind of distill your thoughts and feelings, wonderful. If you get the thing that we suggest, even better. But if you don't, I still feel like that's a win.
Totally. Just like your car. I mean, what we're hoping to do is help mobilize you to find something that you go, I have to have this, and I want to drive this. And that's what's happened here with Ben. I just love it. He actually said that what he found was a 2017 Ford Mustang EcoBoost. And he went down his own list. He wanted low-end torque. It has it. He wanted it to be comfortable for long-distance drives. It does. He wanted golf clubs and a bag. Not strapped to the side. Guess what? It fits in the Mustang. That's good news. Low cost of ownership and under 20 grand if possible. He said just barely. Now, this comes back to when we originally drove the EcoBoost Mustang. We had a pre-production version. They had this is what this is going to cost in the car, and it was like 45 grand. And we both looked at each other and went, like the car, the price
wasn't that much, was it?
Oh, yeah, it was. Oh, yeah, it was.
I want to say it was 30-ish, 45 grand?
I don't think it was 45 grand. Maybe it was like 38, but it was. Here was the thing.
It was shockingly high.
It was high enough. Maybe I'm thinking too high, but it was high 30s at least, because it was high enough that we both looked at each other and went, by this point, you're buying a GT. It had crossed into GT land,
but
where you get the V8.
The point was, you know, the production cars essentially were, okay,
they
you
were,
don't have to
they
have
were
the big
a little
wheels
lower, and you don't have to have everything. Yeah. But here's the other thing that happened. Yeah. Like all of these cars, when they're used, they're suddenly cheaper. And so he found an EcoBoost that's actually pretty well put together, and 2017, slightly used, got it for under 20 grand.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
He has a fun transmission, rear-wheel drive dynamics. He said the only thing he didn't really get was natural steering feel, but it's better than his Mercedes. So the conclusion here is Ben's quite happy.
I love that. He says, how much do I love this car? To quote Jim Gaffigan, dearest Gwendolyn, let me write thee.
No.
Now it's in your head, isn't it? All right, so he's put 12,000 miles on it in less than 7 months, 32.5 miles to the gallon on the highway. He said it's the most powerful, quickest car he's ever owned, loves the view out the front of the hood, and he just thinks it feels very nimble and fun to drive,
more so than it otherwise would
with a GT or a big Corvette or something like that. So he's thrilled with it, and Ben, thanks for writing. Thanks for the update. He liked your suggestion of the used Corvette. And
yeah, I was recommending
actually decided,
Corvettes at
the time. C5, C7, somewhere in there.
He's thinking, okay, maybe cool. Down the line, but for now it's that Mustang, which is awesome. So, Ben, thank you for that. We also had Andrew write in. Now, Andrew, we can just touch on real quickly. Andrew wrote us a couple of times. He found essentially a brand new...
The emails are the funniest.
They were great. He found a brand new Honda CRZ. Now, this is the hybrid Honda that we've talked about with a good 6-speed manual.
Yeah, right.
He found one of these for ridiculously cheap on a dealer lot. They were trying to get rid of it. And it was so cheap. It was like 12 grand. It was so cheap that he kept kind of wondering back over the dealer and going, do I want this car? Do I need this car for a commuter? And he kept driving it and walking away, And then this email comes in.
Yeah, he went back to the dealer twice, he said. He drove it again. Each time he came out of the car, he felt like his driving soul was in tears. He just couldn't do it. What do you feed your driving soul that's in tears? Do you, like, eat the whole pint of Haagen-Dazs?
It's all bad. You have to go karting for an entire day to bring it back.
Cleanse yourself. All right. He says, I can't, won't, nope, not going to happen. Says, on the way home from the dealership, he stopped and bought a BMW 135 M Sport. And his driving soul cried tears of joy as he sped away.
That is the Haagen-Dazs answer to his soul was crying tears. Right there. He went and bought a BMW 135 M Sport. And he's incredibly happy. So his conclusion is, if someone wants a cheap CRZ, he can tell you where to go. But clearly not for Andrew. And he's very happy in his 1 Series. And I applaud you. Well done.
We have another Andrew Jackson, writing to us from episode 355. So fairly recent.
Thank you.
As of this podcast, 380, and he was thinking about, well, we went back. He was thinking about a few things, as a matter of fact.
He had a Miata, and he wanted a commuter to go with his track prep Miata. He was not going to daily this Miata, so he was looking kind of at four doors, and he had kind of landed on, and we liked it. We like it, the E90 M3 four door. Now that is the generation prior to the one we're finishing now, if that makes any sense.
The thirsty one.
Yes, with the V8. Very cool. A car we like. So he wanted that four-door M3, he thought. But I made the comment in the podcast that he didn't really need a four-door, but he'd kind of landed on four-door sedans, and that was his front runner. So we took that into consideration, and you actually called out for him, if he's going to look at that M3, he should drive, and I totally agreed, 335 IS BMW, which is the turbo one step down, and also the more recent 228i to get a slightly smaller feel, because he didn't have to have four doors, but he was leaning four doors.
Right.
Those are your recommendations. I said, look, if you have a track-prepped Miata, for your track car, and you're looking for a fun commuter, he needed to drive both the 86, which would be similar to the Miata in feel, but also the Genesis Coupe, because it would be more commute friendly. Drive both of those. And then I said, what about hot hatches? And I told him to drive three things to kind of look at the spectrum: the GTI, the Focus ST, and the Fiesta ST. So different sizes, different amounts of hair on fire, different amounts of interior quality. These were the things we listed for Andrew.
Yeah, what he ended up getting was a CPO, Certified Paul Lone, 2015 GTI Autobahn with the DSG.
Very cool.
33,000 miles, just under the Paul limiter of 20 grand. His cost was $19,750. Well done, Andrew.
Very cool.
Thrilled that you're loving it. Mm-hmm. And he said, naturally, I christened it with the podcast on his way into work.
I love that. I love that. Awesome. Actually, Andrew sent us a photo of the dash. You can see right there it says the Everyday Driver podcast,
cool.
Which is awesome. Andrew, thanks for that. I'm thrilled that you got that car and you drove some stuff and you wound up with that.
Pretty
so
cool.
Bravo on that purchase.
All right. So last one for the car purchase update for this podcast is Tanner Stamey, writing from episode 188. So way back, 188.
Yeah, it's a while back, yeah.
This was the $5,000 car.
Yeah.
And you all know what we've said about $5,000 car, and he does say, I'm loving my Miata.
Yeah.
You guys are spot on. It hasn't been a $5,000 car. He's at least $7,000 into it, so I'm guessing that's purchase price plus whatever you've done into it.
I don't think he means $7,000 on top of his
$5,000. I hope it's not a $12,000 Miata at this point, Tanner. Well, I'm thrilled that you're loving it, and apparently he made a Snow Kona piece on his way into work
but he got it. He's thrilled. I mean, honestly, to wind up, and I had this experience with the Mini, to wind up with a car you spend $5,000 on, even when you almost invariably end up spending more than $5,000, but you got it cheap, and it just makes you smile. That is a win across the board, and I'm not surprised that the Miata actually checked all those boxes, but I love that you're driving it not only year-round, but in the snow.
Pretty awesome.
And they're thrilled.
I'm so wondering if that's part of the cost in there. The $7,000, he's got winter tires. Hopefully you
probably
do, Tanner.
Probably. He also said that he recently watched the American original Corvette film, and now he kind of wants a Corvette. We agree with you. And that is not a $5,000. Well, actually, if you could get a C4
depends on the C4.
Depends on which one you're getting.
Not the ZR1s, anyway. Though.
Yeah.
They're cheap. They're great. But
they're not that cheap.
But they're not there. So, yes, if you have an update, same place as the car debate. So, everydaydrivertv@gmail.com or the website itself, under the About tab, you can click Contact and email us there for your updates. And, again, please write to us with the episode number and a little bit of background about what we suggested and what you ended up getting. And
yeah, that'd be great.
Hopefully it's helpful. It sounds like it is. And to all four of you, thank you very much. This is really, really cool. And I love that – you know, it's sort of like finally some justifications. We can totally sink our teeth into
well,
this.
And our intention is to do more of these. This idea of just taking the front half of a podcast and just running through a few at once seems like the way to tackle this. We have gotten a good number of these in. There's a decent backlog of that as well. But there's also a massive backlog of people writing in for car debates.
I know.
So we're going to take a break real quick, and we'll be back with one for Austin.
Our sponsor, Wrangler, has given us slightly different copy for our ad, so we realize there's only one way to handle this. We have to bring back the voice. Everybody has a favorite pair of jeans. The pair that fits perfectly and always looks great. The pair you wear out at night, at home, on the couch, at work, wherever. They're the go-to, and you can't underestimate their importance. No one knows this better than Wrangler, the authority on jeans. Using their expertise in comfort and durability, Wrangler jeans are made for the adventurers, the go-getters, the folks who like to keep moving, whether you ride a bike, a bronc, a skateboard, or even drive a car. You could be a person that just wanders the earth looking for we're not sure what. These are still the jeans for you. Classic or modern styles, a range of fits, even vintage re-releases, with a price that works for you. Wrangler has something for everybody. Visit Wrangler.com and check out their great selection of jeans, shirts, pants, outerwear for men and for women. New styles, great fits. Wrangler. Real, comfortable jeans.
That was proper. Yeah. Austin in Houston. He's
Wait, what? I'm confused. Where are we going?
I know. What's
the nav system's completely confused right now.
Exactly.
I want to go to Austin in Houston. Wait, what? Houston in forget it. Anyway.
He is writing to us from the suburb of Katy.
Yeah.
Do you know where that is,
yeah,
by the way?
West Side.
See, I don't know Houston at all.
Okay, when I lived in Houston, which was like when dinosaurs roamed the earth at this point. No, seriously. It was more than 20 years ago. When I lived in Houston, Katy was that suburb you moved to because the houses were really cheap, but you went through a section of nothing to get there. Now Katy's just West Houston.
We just
arrived in Katy. You know, that's what's going on now. Yeah.
Awesome. All right, so Austin is writing to us with the Family Hauler edition. He and his wife are getting ready to start trying for child number two, and they're looking to upgrade one of their cars to something a little more family-oriented. Essentially, they're looking for a family car. They have one child already, 2 years old, and an American Foxhound mix that is about 70 pounds. And he said, the dog's pretty lean, so he's probably medium to large size. And then they're going to start trying for kid number two in the next few months. So they're looking for something that has the rear cargo area with a dog mat from Covercraft.
Yes, completely.
And is dog friendly because, you know, you're going to need it.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like you'll benefit dramatically from this. He and his wife both currently drive Hyundai sedans. She's got the 2014 Elantra, and he's in a 2011 Sonata. They've got the all Hyundai garage.
Yay! But to his credit, to Austin's credit, they didn't set out to buy all Hyundais. His wife had one, and then he had went right around the time
life goals. Hyundai garage.
Right with nothing to make bad cars. It's just we don't want you all in the same. Anyway, moving on. Right about the time he and his wife started dating, he had a 2009 Volkswagen Jetta that was dying, and his future father-in-law was going to sell his Sonata. And so it worked out that Austin was able to buy that,
and his father. Or his father-in-law got the EcoBoost Mustang.
Yeah, exactly. It all connects. But that's why they wound up in two Hyundais. And they've enjoyed them. But the big discussion is that, okay, we want to get a family vehicle which read either really nice wagon or probably an SUV. And his wife says that eventually she thinks a three-row vehicle makes sense. But they're not there yet. So part of this debate is Austin going, should we just go ahead and get the three-row?
This is interesting. Yeah. She wants the three-row for when the kids are older and they're hauling their friends around too.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, kid number two has not even been conceived yet, so at least 5 to 8 years out before this even happens. There's some leeway time. You might get tired of this.
I'm going to stop right here.
Why do we need to get the Suburban now?
I'm going
to
stop right here because you have hit on the point. Look, I'm not good at math, but I'm going to do a little parrot math here real quick, Austin, just so you know.
Is that like everyday driver car math?
It's kind of like that. It's fuzzy math for sure. But here's the thing, Austin. If you guys get pregnant, I am no doctor. And I am not good at math.
But I did stay at a Holiday Inn Express
last night. But if you guys get pregnant the week this podcast comes out, you're 9 months from having kid number two.
Soccer practice is still a ways away.
T-ball is still
a ways out.
And then you're even farther out from The kids are old enough that they have friends that you need to take anywhere. That's another year or two or three out from that scenario. So my thinking here is, and you already touched on it, Paul, I suspect you may be 3 to 4 years from needing more than 5 seats. I mean needing. Like, we actually have to take extra people. The only argument you could make here is, my in-laws came into town. Well, now you need more than 5 seats. Because I've had this experience.
True.
But how often do they come into town? How often is that an issue? I think what you do is you get a car that meets your needs, your immediate needs, or your kind of immediate future needs, which is probably a 5-seat, either nice wagon or a small SUV. And then when you get to a place where you're like, we really are outgrowing this car, that's years from now. Trade up then, because the other version is you keep this new 3-row for next 3-4 years, putting miles on it while other 3-rows come out.
Right.
And then what do you do? You're going to drive that one into the ground? You're going to try to get another 3-row? Let's be incremental, Austin. Let's not overwhelm. Trust me, parenting is overwhelming enough. And I realize you already have a child, but parenting is overwhelming enough. You're talking about two kids and dog owners. Let's not move as a huge move.
Look, playing just, you know, as a, maybe they're long-term planners and they're just thinking this is going to be the really long term and let's just get this done. We're going to buy one couch for the rest of our lives. That's the couch.
This is our couch. That's our TV.
We're done. I've checked.
Thank you for playing.
Check the box off. We got it. We don't have to do anything more. Things change, obviously. We're kidding you. But obviously things change. Life changes. And Todd's right. The BMW X7 is going to be right in your price range when you're ready for it. Just saying. You're going to want those
used
giant kidney
for everyone.
Grills.
Yeah. Oh, man.
So actually, just talking about that with my attorney today, is you went and drove one in Florida with his father-in-law, who was looking for one. And I get it. For a big family, yes, they're great. But, you know, crystal gear shift lever and everything. Those are coming used at us at some point. I'm curious about this because right now, she doesn't have a big commute. She's got a short commute and working from home 2 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
His current commute is roughly 110 miles a day, so something large for him wouldn't be a good idea.
Yeah.
But what I did notice in here is this kind of sneaky thing that he's saying, I want to go ahead and just take care of this now so the next car we buy will be for me.
I see that.
He slid that in there.
I see
that. Did you notice that?
Yes, but this is going to be an ongoing discussion. Because here's the thing.
Yes.
If you're thinking, Austin, and I say this as a guy that fights this battle, I mean, thankfully my wife is, I'm winning at this right now, but this is the discussion though. If you think, oh, I'll get the big car now because she's going to let me get a tiny car later, there's a discussion coming anyway.
It's still coming
at
you.
If you have two kids and a dog and you want to go buy yourself a 2-seat car, I'm the poster child for that can work. I don't have two kids, but I do have two dogs now. Anyway,
right.
But I'm the poster child for this can work. But there's a discussion about how do we make this work. And you will not kind of sidestep that discussion by getting the big 3-row currently. I also think you're going to have to get something your wife wants to drive, because I agree, if you get something big, you're going to get killed on gas mileage if you do the commute in it. So it's going to have to be her daily car. And does she want 3 rows yet?
Here, he says she's okay not getting the 3-row quite yet.
Agreed. I know.
He likes the Jag F-Pace and Volvo. Those were on my minds, but he's scared of general European maintenance across the board.
The thoroughbred problem, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. He was actually sniffing around the Buick Crosstour, but he heard that it's not really engaging to drive. We have not gotten in that, and it actually would be kind of a cool fast blast.
I agree. We should
drive
that.
That would be kind of
interesting. But I would also argue, though, that once you start shopping SUVs, fun to drive starts dying quickly anyway. It just does.
As soon as you say the word,
not
necessarily.
Three row, it starts to die. That's true.
Not SUVs, but just 3 rows. Yeah. We're like, that's the shutoff point there.
Yeah, it's much harder at 3-row. You're right.
Well, he says he's coming out of a Sonata, so anything with more power is probably going to be fun, but we're shopping for her. Mm-hmm. He says Mazda just needs to bring the Mazda 6 wagon to the States. I agree, which kind of got me thinking.
Okay, good.
I started out with Expedition and Suburban thinking.
Okay.
They're enormous. They're gas hogs.
Not only are they 3 rows, but they are 3 rows, and you need an intercom to reach the back seat.
Here's the radios for our trip, kids. Seriously. I know we're just going to the grocery store, which is 2.3 miles away, but take your radios because we need to communicate. Or just text me. No, don't text. Don't text the driver. Don't text
the
driver.
You've got the toddler in the back trying to text the parent who's driving in the front. This is a disaster.
The toddler will
wheels.
Be able to text you.
The toddler will figure it out for
yes,
sure. Yeah,
it is that intuitive. All right, so I started there, just general thinking. I started in the Honda Pilot, Acura MDX land. Interesting. I also want you to really take a close look at the brand new Kia Telluride.
Oh, interesting.
Starts at 31.8.
Okay.
7 or 8 passenger seating. And I know.
Here's
why it's appealing. Is because you're Hyundai people already.
Okay. Yeah.
This keeps you in the same family, the same mm-hmm. good warranty and reliability that they're known for now.
Mm-hmm.
It's brand new. It's, like I said, 7 or 8 passengers. Mm-hmm. They're going to kill it with this SUV.
Yeah.
I like the looks. I think it's going to be, it's clean enough to be long term for what we're talking about. 5, 6, 8, 9, 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
9-year-olds getting with muddy shoes after soccer practice in the rain. I mean, mm-hmm. that's coming, but you could theoretically have it that long. I'm mm-hmm. confident.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you said wagon, I went, what can we do here? What can we do?
Good.
Now,
good, good.
This is wild of the wild cards because it is European.
Okay.
But what if your wife were rocking a 2016 Mercedes E350 4MATIC wagon for $35,000?
Oh, those are awesome. $35,000 is the top of the Paul limiter, and you've still made that work. I'm impressed. Those
under
are cool.
50,000 miles, so will they go to 150? Sure.
Will you pay maintenance? Sure.
Yes. Is it a Mercedes? Is it a European car? But the solid feeling. I like the styling.
Yeah.
I like the Mercedes
wagons.
They're unique, and there's still more driving feel in that 7-seater wagon because it has the cool rear 2-facing
interesting
seats.
Interesting point. All right.
And how cool will she be when she rolls up? She's got genuine 7 seats, and the kids are going to fight over who gets the 2 rear-facing jump seats.
The rumble seats? That's funny. That's very funny.
I guarantee you, they will fight, because how cool is that?
Yeah, you get to look out the back. And invariably, the kids wave at the people behind them, yeah.
What's interesting, though, is I'm with you on the wagons, because, and this is my general headspace, I'm like 49% serious on the Mercedes wagon. It's very much a wild card. I realize mm-hmm. that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's still in contention, because normally, it's a sedan with, it's got a backpack on the back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you don't have to use those seats. It's got a lot of nice cargo space for the dog that you're talking about. And the best part is it's not an SUV, and it's still got some driving goodness that 7-passenger, 3-row SUVs will never have.
Yeah, yeah, I see it.
So this is my headspace. It's hard to find anything other than the Mercedes wagon for the 7-seat capability. That's the problem.
Yes, because they're all 5-seaters, essentially.
They're all 5.
Once you get
into wagons,
it's 5.
You go BMW, you go Jag, you go anything else.
Yeah, I mean,
be
you
5.
Have the Volvo, but then that's not the Volvo 7-seat wagons.
Mercedes
are not really known
is unique
for their
in that sense.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, thinking of 7-seaters, all of you are probably thinking original Model S with those 2 rear-facing jump
sure,
seats.
Sure, sure.
They're just not $35,000 yet.
Yes, that's true.
That's the
true.
Problem with those. So I love the wagon idea. This is why they work so well, because as your family grows, Mercedes thinks, well, we've got you covered.
Yeah.
And you definitely can look at Mercedes as your long-term car. You just will be maintaining it and taking care of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're fine with that, it's going to be a better drive, and she's going to like rocking the Mercedes. Just saying. But if that doesn't matter, if none of that matters, look at the Telluride.
Okay. I like your suggestions. I have a few, and they're all over the map.
Okay.
One of the cars that actually Austin brought up that is compelling here, he's talking about 7-seaters, which I don't think you need that yet, but let's talk about it anyway.
The Mazda, kids aren't here.
The Mazda,
quick, we need to buy a Suburban.
The Mazda CX-9, okay?
Yeah.
Compelling. We have some coverage of that coming up. So I see that, but that led me to some discussions, as did your wagon stuff. I do want to say this is almost a wild card. This is one of those cars for me that is simultaneously a wild card and a sniper shot. Because if I was just picking a car for you, Austin, I'd be like, did you know these are this cheap? And we're done.
Yeah.
But I don't know that this car I'm about to bring up, I don't know that your wife is going to want it. But believe it or not, there are a few in your price range.
Really? Okay.
Cadillac CTS-V wagon.
Really? You went
there
wagon too?
There are a few hovering around $35,000.
We saw two of these in LA when we were there. Well, you see, you'll see a bunch of anything.
Yes, true.
You're playing slug bug with Tesla Model 3s.
Yeah, look, this has got a big old 6-liter engine under the hood, and it's fast, and it's mean, and it's awesome. Let's be honest. Now, a lot of them out there are $45,000 to $50,000 used, but there are some in your price point. I've actually got a couple in front of me here, and one of them's 33 and the other one's 37, and they are ranging between about 60 and 80,000 miles. So that I think it's more wild card if you were just shopping. Let's get a hot wagon. Done. You're in Austin. You're not going to have to worry about weather. It's rear-wheel drive. It's fun. Let's do that for the family car.
Mm-hmm.
The dog is trying to hang on desperately in the back. I mean, I like this picture. Anyway.
All four legs.
Seriously.
Trapped like load locks.
It's trying to hang on because we're taking off. Yeah, dad's going. Anyway.
Dog knows.
I did think about that. So there is that. You need to drive a Cayenne, a used Cayenne.
Yeah,
because
that's good.
Yes, when it has maintenance, and I say this as an owner, when it has maintenance, the maintenance can get expensive, especially at the 40,000-mile intervals. However, they generally just run, and they are usable seats and good space. If you get the first gen, is going to be the cheap one, and the first gen is larger than the second gen.
And you can get an S for $35,000.
Oh, you can get a nice S for $35,000. Yeah. You can almost get a second gen S for $35,000. So you're gonna have,
if he just went with the V6, he could get even newer probably. If he didn't need the S, and just, I mean, they're still 300 horsepower.
Yeah, totally.
Got a great V6 in them.
I think you should go drive a Cayenne, and that's a worthwhile 5-seater. Mm-hmm. While I'm here, you brought up Mazda CX-9. I don't think you need it yet. Yeah. Go shop the Mazda CX-5. It is every bit as big as the Cayenne, or maybe a little bigger. Actually, I think it is bigger than the current gen Cayenne, but about the same size as the Cayenne I have.
Five? You think it's bigger?
It's surprising. Well, because the problem is when they went to the second gen Cayenne, they have an even more raked back hatch, and you lost hatch space. So
yeah. Okay.
Drive the CX-5. Okay. I think you'll be surprised by how good that is for the money. And I think you're just going to like the interior and the space and everything. And it's a 5-seater. And then if we have to go 7, you could. I liked your Telluride, by the way, but you could actually look at a brand new Volkswagen Atlas. They're selling for your money. They're selling brand new.
Are they 35? I thought they started at 35 and went up from there.
Well, but there's been all kinds of incentives. I have heard of multiple people that have bought them for 35 or less, new ones.
Okay.
And look, we're talking about how long this car may be in your life. This is the Volkswagen Apology Tour. 7 years, 72,000 miles of warranty. Keep the car 5 years. Have your wife drive it so it doesn't rack up a ton of miles. You stay within warranty. There's probably a Volkswagen dealer in Katy. Anything happens, you drive it in and go, fix that. Get a loaner car. Problem solved.
What sort of music goes along with the Apology Tour? Is that Rammstein or
I don't know.
Something like
I don't
know hard really?
No, it's got to be plinky plunky music. It's got to be stuff that makes you feel very relaxed. Everybody relax. We're on the Apology Tour.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, there's that.
All right. Well, thanks for writing to us, Austin. Really appreciate it. Hope it's helpful. And you know what? I hope this debate is helpful to a lot of you guys listening, the families out there. Mm-hmm. Hope this just kind of resonates and gets you thinking.
In fact, hang on. That gives me a great question to jump to.
Okay.
Because of two things. Our friend Shane, longtime friend of the show, wrote in asking about family 3-row SUVs. I want to talk about his question, and I also want to touch on a car that we just got from the press fleet.
Yeah,
right. I'm driving.
I haven't even been in this car yet.
I know. Shane's question is, okay, hang on. Would we sacrifice and drive the family 3-row SUV every day in order to still have a dedicated sports car? Would we make that sacrifice? And Shane, I think you're asking a separate question as well, and so I want to stop here really quickly and give a disclaimer. As you've probably heard, if you listen to the show for more than 5 minutes, we want you to be in a car that you love. We want you to be in a car that is fun to drive and you enjoy driving and you look back at it in the parking lot and all those kind of things. However, the other thing about the everyday driver part of this show is it has to meet your needs. Life changes. Stuff happens. If you wind up in a unfun-to-drive utility car for some reason, this makes you no less an enthusiast.
Very true.
This is not who you are as a car lover.
Yes.
You may go through a season. I've been through these seasons where it's like, that's my garage? all right, well, that's just that's the budget, and that's the stuff that fell into my life, and that's the stuff I'm driving. I don't love it, and I want to have that, but I can't right now.
Absolutely.
So, Shane, there's no apology necessary here, and it is no blow to anybody. If you don't have a car, if you have a car that's not an enthusiast car, welcome. Everyone is welcome here. Okay.
Absolutely.
So I wanted to make sure that was stated.
Yeah, thank you for restating that.
If you have a family three-row SUV, and in order for you to keep a fun car in your life, Shane, that means that becomes your daily, and the fun car becomes an every once in a while car. I say this to you, Shane, there's nothing wrong with that as long as the fun car gets driven. If the fun car just sits for the, well, I need to get that out someday.
I have it to check the box.
We need to figure out how to solve the three-row SUV problem to make it more interesting.
Yeah.
And that leads me to this. We have a Acura MDX right now. I have not driven an MDX in years. This is a brand new MDX. This is our most recent press car.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pleasantly surprised because it is a full three-row, seven-seat SUV.
See him around Park
City
a lot.
And it really isn't much bigger than, it may be the same size, I haven't actually looked up the stats, but it's about the same size as my wife's Cayenne. It's not huge. And I'm amazed they got three seats out of it. Now, three rows out of it. Now, the way they did that, of course, is with the third row up, Fiesta STs have the same amount of rear cargo space.
Right, I was going to say.
It has very little cargo space.
But
how often do you need the third row? And here was the thing. I was driving it earlier today. Now, granted, it's loaded out at $56,000. It's not cheap. But I was driving it earlier today, and I put my foot in it, and it went, whoa. I was like, where did that engine noise come from?
Well, it is the A-spec package.
Yes.
It's got
their big V6 in it, but it's got a good exhaust note. Who thinks about an exhaust note on a seven-seat SUV? They did. It's got this big, growly exhaust note, like it's doing something. And it's it's not floppy. A lot of big seven-seat SUVs just feel loose and floppy on their suspension, and this isn't.
No, absolutely. Many cases, they're trucks.
I'm buying it for the driving fun? No, but you have to change your perspective. But if you wind up in something that has that capability and then still surprises you with its dynamics, that's a win as well.
Very cool. Can't wait to drive it. All right, jump into Facebook. Question from Scott Berger. We all know car manufacturers make cars in large quantities to keep costs low and consistency high. Yes, 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 yes. This takes tooling, machinery, a lot of effort, and a lot of people. What about concepts and one-offs? We haven't talked about this yet.
Okay.
How are they made? Who makes them? And is it done by machine, hand, or both?
Excellent. Concepts. Glad you're doing this.
This is interesting, Scott. Thank you for the excellent question. Many car companies make their own. GM, Ford, FCA, BMW, Mercedes, they've all got model shops, and they refer to it as such, the shop, the model shop.
Mm-hmm.
And they're constantly building and working with the designers and engineering to validate parts of the project as the project progresses. They're constantly going back and forth. The amount of work these guys produce in just building things, carving foam, mocking stuff up, welding stuff is staggering, actually. But then when it does come time for concepts, they will build the entire thing in-house. Many of them do.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still so much work, as evidenced by our Geneva discussion.
Yeah.
There's still so much work that there's many companies that will take on special projects, secret projects, and help car companies produce all the one-offs. A lot of times, the concept is designed and built after the production car is done. It's in tooling, it's at the factory, it's going nuts, and then the designers get to work on the concept car and kind of turn it into the thing they wanted the production car to be like, or it's the car that will pull the public in and say, that's the concept, I can't wait for the production. Here it is, it's coming shortly. So, mostly by hand, mostly tube frames, they're welded up because they don't have a chassis to work with. They're not going to build off of that. A lot of companies have rolling electric skateboard platforms already with electric motors. They don't have the range. They might have the similar power that a production car has, but they will build them and they can shorten them or lengthen them. And then they can just build that right on top of that foundation.
Mm.
And they can say, we've truly got a rolling electric car. And that is proliferating the companies in China. But I do want to leave you with a list of companies that do make these. And if you're interested, you can go look these up. A lot of them are in Italy, as a matter of fact. Italy has a huge business just for concept cars, and there's a big price difference between the static show model and the car that actually drives and runs.
Oh, yeah. big time.
And because the car companies will say, ooh, this is just a one-off. Mm-hmm. Please don't sit there. Don't sit like this. Just perch on the edge of
that. Don't breathe on it. Don't get near it.
You're limited to 25 miles an hour and you can go around once.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you get.
Yeah, totally.
It's because the cars are just, they're chewing gum and Bisquick. And
they're model kits. Yeah.
Paper clips, you know, barely there.
Totally.
And they cost $3 or $4 million a piece. Well, you're paying for people's time to build them. So ASC, RM Corp, Roush Industries, interestingly, mm-hmm. Magna and Magna Steyr, Metal Crafters in California, that is run by the Gafoglio family, a company called Venture Industries, Special Projects, Ital Design, Fioravanti, another Chinese company called East One, there's Technicon Design worldwide, Bertone was recently acquired by AKKA Technologies, Carrozzeria Touring Superleggera, which is
done.
The company that
Nicely
builds
done.
The Aston or the Alfa Romeo Disco Volante.
Ooh. Oh, God.
That's
the
company
car.
That built those one-offs. And finally, a company called CECOMP.IT. They're based in Torino, Italy. Hmm. And they made all the titanium metalwork, the titanium body panels for the Volcano. That is V as in Victor, designed by actually a classmate of mine, Samuel Shafar.
Yeah.
He had the craziest stuff. And so they tortured titanium into his crazy shape built on top of a Ferrari F12.
Yeah, craziness.
And that is a tiny list of car companies.
Yeah, especially
and
companies doing that. Yeah, for
the
sure.
The people you don't hear about, there's a huge industry growing in Europe, huge in Italy, and it's incredible in China. But there's all kinds of these companies, and that's why we see such proliferation of cars. It's such a huge industry, and the behind-the-scenes stuff is so cool.
Crazy, crazy, crazy. I'm going to do an unintended shout-out here because of Tim Marsh's question on Instagram. He says, okay, what are good car shipping companies for shipping a car across the country?
Oh, yeah.
Now, the minute you give your number to any of these, go back and listen to the update I gave about buying my Lancer and how you just get descended upon by vultures. Because what really happens is the minute you start putting your information in, you're getting approached by dispatchers. You're not getting approached by people with trucks. You're getting approached by dispatchers. I went through a few dispatchers. I wound up on one I'm going to tell you right now. Reach out to Ironclad Transport. Talk to Joanna.
Nice.
She was fantastically awesome and nuts at the same time. Tell her that the crazy guy with the Mitsubishi Lancer in the dead center of Wisconsin sent you, okay? She was great. Now, all of these, you can read good and bad reviews.
Of course.
But Joanna, actually, she exceeded what I asked for.
Nice.
Both in price and in the kind of transport I got. And she was very open about how it all worked. So I would say look into that. There are a million. I'm not saying that's the only one. There are plenty of others. You can go into the big companies like Reliable and spend a ton of money. That's
how
stuff gets to Monterey every year. But
yeah,
you're
exactly.
shipping one car and you can have your options. And so give her a call.
Sounds like she'll contract to whomever will, you know, whomever's available and pick stuff up, and she knows the ins and outs.
She told me all about it. It all goes on a big board, apparently, and all the truckers start looking at it. So there you go.
Very cool. Okay, really awesome question from Chris Quick on Facebook.
Okay.
He's read a couple of articles recently stating that rideshare services like Uber and Lyft are killing new car sales. The argument used by the writer that these services are drastically reducing the cost of travel expenses, cutting out car ownership expenses. Mm. Of course, there's the usual autonomous driving vehicles clause saying the costs are going down. But what impact do we think the ride-sharing services are having on new car sales? I think minimal, to be honest. There's two reasons. There's, first of all, many people are trying this business of buying new cars with the intention of, you know, this is now my business, so I need a brand new car.
Yeah. Yeah,
we've all gotten the Uber or Lyft with a, you know, the Toyota Camry that has the nasty stained rear seats that you want to perch on.
Car. Yeah, yeah.
But many people want to have the 5-star rating, and so they're buying new cars.
Yeah.
And this is their business. It's
and
a
they're buying
write-off.
SUVs because they want space to
well,
do that.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
So there is that, but then I think the ownership, the wanting ownership of our own car is never going to go away.
I think it will get smaller. But I don't
Maybe,
think it goes
but
away
but how
completely.
Much? I don't think it's going to shrink dramatically. I still think the idea of having the thing that we own that takes us from A to B exactly when I want to go isn't really ever going to go away. It's still a part of what we want. Cars are such a status symbol. Let's forget the usefulness of cars.
Yeah.
That if cars weren't a status symbol, we could theoretically drive our cars forever. Then. Our debate for Austin, yes, you can buy the Suburban now and keep it till you die, and we're good.
Yeah, you're right. But I think theoretically now, if when we actually get to autonomous pods, there is a large segment of the populace, not saying a majority, but a large segment of the populace who doesn't even want to be bothered. And if they can get somewhere by the, because then they get the benefits, they don't want to drive. Mm-hmm. So they get mm-hmm. the benefits of private transportation with none of the hassles of actually owning anything. And there is a segment of that population that will embrace that fully. And it's
true.
It'll
I agree
a
with
subscription
that.
Thing.
It depends
but
on
I
where
think,
you live, though.
But it'll depend on where you live. It'll depend on what you think about cars in general.
Yeah.
And yeah. I mean, like, I hope my son will be a person who's like, it's time I get my driver's license. I'm going to go get it. But if we lived in Manhattan, he'd probably never even think twice about it.
Yeah. Very,
so it's
going to
all of this is going to be a factor. It's very interesting.
Very true. All right. What else?
You know what? Shurg4 on Instagram asked an interesting question nobody's ever asked. He said he's noticed that – oh, I'm sorry. I'll go with that one. I'll come back to another one in a minute. He said, we also often mention driving games and simulations for practice. And
oh, yeah,
that
right.
can be helpful.
Right.
This was not the question I thought it was, but I'm going to do this one anyway. That it can be helpful for track days. What do we recommend? What do we like? Look, I have a PS4. I have got most of – I've actually tried almost every driving game you can try for PS4. I'm not going to go into a big review thing, but some are better than others. Some are more frustrating than others. Some are actually more video games than they are simulations. I prefer the simulation ones. Assetto Corso is awesome, and so is Project Cars 2 right now. I highly recommend a wheel and a seat. It completely changes your ability to do the games and to get, honestly, to get any benefit out of it as a driver, you have to have a wheel and a seat. But all of that thrown out for a second, if you really want, if you're chasing the best, you have to be PC based and VR. And
yeah.
unfortunately,
yeah.
to this point, the PlayStation isn't heavy duty enough and dedicated enough that, like, Project Cars 2 is a great example. You can do VR on PC in Project Cars 2. But you can't do VR on PS4
yep.
on Project Cars 2.
Yep.
I would. That's the only reason I want a dedicated PC, but that's just the money's going elsewhere.
Everybody needs all the consoles and all the games.
Yeah, exactly.
And the wheel and the pedals make all the difference.
Sure.
The controllers.
No, the wheel and the
that
pedals.
That is all seriousness.
Even if you're doing PS4 or Xbox, you need the wheel and the pedals. If you want to use it as a simulation, you have to have it.
Design questions. I've got about three or four here I want to get through really
Great.
Quickly. J.R. Schultz on Instagram. Thoughts on the 2020 Sonata design? I dig it. I do too. I really like what Hyundai is doing. They're using lighting technology to change the look of the car different than the shape of the headlights and taillights, the graphics. Mm-hmm. So at night, it actually takes on a different persona. I like it a lot.
Cool.
Simple, clean surfaces. It's got a bit of a Civic light kind of tail light look on the back, which a little bit much for me on that one, but in general I like what the surface brake was doing. They're finding new things and they're actually kind of kicking other car makers in the teeth, which is cool.
Love it.
What else? Kevin Strange on Facebook, why do designers keep sticking iPads on top of dashboards and calling it a day? Yeah, I agree. I think it has a lot to do with manufacturing because of mm-hmm. more material breakup and more actual part breakup.
Mm-hmm.
We've gone through the early 2000s era of having the screen embedded as part of the dash. There are cars that still do that to this day, but
yeah.
as a design language, it does make sense to isolate the shape of the screen from the theme of the dash.
Mm.
Now you're left with how creative are you in putting it somewhere? Some cars accomplish this a lot better than others.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I would love it if car companies actually thought of and would support future upgrades. We'll pop that screen out and give you the new upgrade. So, hey, you bought the used whatever and...
Yeah.
Hey, just paid $99 and you get the new screen from the new car?
If the screen's going to stick up
okay.
like that, it should be interchangeable. I totally agree with that.
I don't think manufacturers are going to go that
They're
far
not.
To
They're
replace
not,
it.
Yeah.
Or let's actually go partner with a tablet manufacturer. It's mm-hmm. Amazon or an iPad or whatever. And now that screen, because
Plugs
we
in.
Can plug
yeah.
in the next
yeah,
one.
Yeah, let's do that.
Go embrace that and stop trying to make your own screen. Stop
mm-hmm.
trying to design and make mm-hmm. and all that stuff. We all, you know... Well, not we all, but a lot of people have tablets already.
Mm-hmm.
This, you know, maybe you get a free tablet with the purchase of the car.
I think that's one of the reasons this design proliferates is we're used to having the phone or the tablet kind of sticking up in our view anyway. So I think they kind of have gotten lazy and just embraced that. Charlie K. NYC had a question about the TV show and the way we produce something that nobody's ever asked. So I wanted to talk about this real quick. He said he's noticed TV show, YouTube, fast blasts, feature films, we don't use much voiceover. And he, when he watches Top Gear, Motor Week, most other car shows lean on voiceover. Why have we made this decision? Here's the answer, Charlie. Honestly, voiceover can be used very, very well. And it has been used very, very well. And the Top Gear guys, actually, when they were doing the current three guys that are on Grand Tour, when they were in their later years of Top Gear UK, used it very well because they would start a sentence in the car, finish the sentence in voiceover. That takes a ton of pre-planning, and when done right, can be very, very cool. That's not the majority of the way it gets used, though. The way it gets used most of the time is as a crutch.
Mm-hmm.
The person didn't actually say what we needed them to say. They need to say this. Let's put them in the booth, and they'll say it. This comes from a lot of things, but it comes from my background in film, where when you get the actor in to do ADR, additional dialogue recording, because there was a fan on in the background and it mangled your line on set, the read's never as good. It's cleaner, but it's never as good.
And it sounds different. It sounds strange.
The breathlessness that exists by getting it on the day, in the moment, when you and I are in the car, that actually plays so much more visceral and real than any time we voice over anything. And I'll give you two examples, one from our show and one from film. When Tom first started working for us, now Tom's working in a second language, okay?
True.
He's German. He's
and
working in
kudos
English.
Kudos to him for that.
He wanted to do a lot of voiceover, and I said, throw it all out. And he was horrified, and I said, throw it all out. If you don't get it in the car, you don't get it. I gave him that line in the sand, and he was horrified. And he was like, ever? And I was like, that's my challenge to you. Get it in the car, in the seat. And so the first piece he ever did for us, I'm not kidding, was a 10-minute piece. He did 4 hours of recording.
Because he had to sort through that much
footage. Because he was so horrified, he wouldn't have said something he needed. And then he got better about it over time. And we've used voiceover. You and I have used voiceover.
Of course.
Tom's used voiceover.
Of course.
But I try to use it as an absolute stopgap of, we physically don't have that, and I have to connect these two pieces, and I need this sentence because I want that visceral feel. I will give you one real quick Hollywood story.
Okay.
Lord of the Rings.
All right. Good.
Go watch the first Lord of the Rings movie. They fight the cave troll underground in the area of the dwarves. They're in the underground mine, and the orcs come in with a cave troll.
Okay.
It's a great battle scene. It's a fantastic battle scene. Right. I watched it recently and it's still awesome.
All right.
Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Runs to the door and puts the big bar in the door. Now the line is, he looks out and almost gets hit by an arrow, and he sees the cave troll, and the line is, he turns around. I've seen it in the original. He turns around breathless. You can barely understand him because he's so in the moment, and he goes, "They've got a cave troll." Because he's horrified that this thing is coming.
Okay.
That's not the way it is in the final film. Because it was so mangled with rustling of clothing and him being so breathless and everything else going on in the mix, you couldn't understand it. So they ADR'd it.
Okay.
The ADR line sounds like he's sipping a martini.
Oh, no.
They have a cave troll. But they did it because you can hear it, and because it's the first time you've heard what that creature is that's coming. If you listen to it having never heard this story, it will never bother you. I've now ruined it for you. I'm sorry. But the ADR line was not one quarter as good as the original, but the original was so breathless in the moment, you didn't get there.
But nobody could have figured it out or understood
that's
it.
The
like,
they
now,
were concerned
what did he say?
Because,
and keep watching.
Because that line from him was the reveal moment of what that sound was you heard yelling. You needed to have somebody in the room, movie-making-wise, tell you what that terrible noise was before you saw it. You need to introduce that character. Somebody needed to say, hey, there's a cave troll coming. So it was Sean Bean's line, they've got a cave troll. But it was so mangled in the moment that it was now ADR of, they have a cave troll.
So, Gwendolyn, they have a cave troll.
Less VO.
Funny. I'm glad you pointed that out. And excellent question. All right. A few more here. A question from Ivana Prison on Instagram. What material or design aspects do you look for in a car if you find interior rattles and squeaks annoying? There's no way to look at something and say, that will rattle like crazy or that won't. It's difficult to do that.
It's very hard.
But I hear what you're saying. And generally speaking, you could look at interiors that are more complex and have more part breakups. So think of the more parts you have to screw together and fasten together, the more chance they're going to want to come apart over time.
Sure.
If they're single slabs of things, one large piece of plastic that meets one other large piece of plastic. Now, there's no guarantee that that joint is not going to squeak and rattle.
Sure.
Unfortunately. But this is, it depends on the price of the car, honestly.
That's another big factor.
Factor. Honestly, the high-end cars, if there are squeaks and rattles, they're going to be hearing about it from you. I mean, Porsches are amazing, but there are still squeaks in my GTS.
In
inexplicable places, but it's just where the inside of the C-pillar meets just a little panel. And when you're on certain roads, it just squeaks and there's nothing you can do. The rest of the instrument panel is flawless.
And generally, the cheaper the car, the more likely, but not always.
But not always. There's some cars, the original Honda, the Ridgeline, that was bulletproof. Not a squeak, not a rattle. And there's somebody out there that's got a... got one that does.
Well, I had a friend who bought...
Super well built.
Who bought a really nice luxury car. And she took it back like three times over the first month because she'd had a week and one of the speakers, something about the way the speaker was mounted started rattling and she took it back. She was like, guys, this car, this price, that shouldn't happen. And they had to chase it and it took three visits and they finally tracked down whatever was shaking in one of her speakers. It was doing that constant squeak thing that speakers do. Ugh. She got it killed because she was like, guys, not acceptable. And they said, you're right, but it took them three tries.
We found a mouse nest. No, just kidding.
All bad.
All right, we've got to wrap things up. All right, Damon Patton, any cool quirks features he should try with his Model 3 rental he has for the next couple of days?
Okay.
Go to TeslaRoddy.com and search for Easter eggs. I think there's like family photos of Elon Musk that appear.
It's crazy. You can do
it's nuts.
You can do this Tesla's Star Trek thing. You can do all kinds of crazy things. Evil Tangents Dale asked the question many people have asked, so I just thought I'd land on his, but many people have asked it. Essentially said, okay, we just drove this Corolla, the XSE. Where does it go in relation to our lukewarm hatches episode, which was the base Civic Sport?
Good question.
The Mazda 3 and the Elantra GT. Where does it go? I think it's more fun to drive than all three, but it is not as nice as them either.
Wow. I think you're wrong.
Okay.
But I don't think Toyota is thinking that positioning.
Okay.
And it was surprising. If you think without expectation... and come into it, it's surprising. But if you think it's a performance, anything close to a hot hatch, you're going to be disappointed.
No, but I don't. But those cars aren't hot hatches either. I think if we're talking fun to drive, I felt like it was more fun. I thoroughly enjoyed having that press car as we drove around LA. Yeah. I think it was more fun to drive than those three on sheer fun to drive factor. But it isn't as good as those as far as how nice is it. How nice does it feel? Where did my money go? It's not as nice. Hmm. But if it's just fun to drive, I think it's better than those three.
I like that we keep dicing it up, too.
Yep.
I like that we'll keep debating. Going. It's great. Okay, guys, we're wrapping it up. Thank you a million for your questions. We've got so many more to get to, but we will continue to answer them on subsequent podcasts. Like we said, if you've got your own debate, write to us. Write to us with what's on your mind, and the social media questions are the day we podcast generally. So look for those Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter postings.
Local friend Jamie asked us if it's ever going to stop snowing, and I don't know that it is,
but
I would like to get my Lotus out of the drive. A portion of my driveway today melted enough I saw concrete, and I was like, concrete?
What is this doing?
There's concrete. That's crazy, but it's still not possible. It'll happen. Thank you guys so much for listening. We would love for your ratings on the podcast. Watch the TV show. Rate that on Amazon and IMDb if you would. That helps us immensely as well.
Looking forward to next time. Cheers, everyone.